Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to strap our boots on. This is a perfect day to die. Wipe the blood out of our eyes. Surrender, and there's nothing left for us to do. Find the strength to see this through. We are the ones who will never be broken. With our final breath, we'll fight to the death. We are soldiers, we are soldiers.
Conversation at the Patriots Journalist Network. And ways you can find the Patriots Journalist Network is if you are a Facebook user, just go to the top in the search engine and put in Newt Now, NEWTNOW, which is one word. And that will take you to a application where you can see a list of the different shows, including this one. You can also find Charlotte Dively's show from 9 until 10 Eastern Time, and that is PM, and that is Pray USA. And then you also have, which is following this show from 10 p.m. to midnight, and many times after midnight, and that is Samuel Sanford's show, 1 Million March to Tampa, 1 Million Patriot March to Tampa. And then you also have 10 p.m., in which you could, using this list, switch back and forth between the shows, or go with one, and that is Mark Prasik's show, which is live video chat, in which on this first segment, you will be able to participate and bring in and suggest clips and articles to be read, discussed, and analyzed in the second segment of the Mark Prasik's show, live video chat, at midnight and to 2 a.m., and sometimes going beyond that. And also on the list, you will see Rex and Tex, which is a co-host show on someone Blog Talk Radio, and that is on Friday and Saturday evenings from 10 p.m. and I'm sorry, from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. And of course, those are all Eastern times. And also, as I said, you can find after this show Samuel Sanford's, which of course many of you already do know to discuss it. He has a discussion on the conservative conversation. Now tonight, we have a special guest, and her name is Sharon Fletcher, and she is the president of, senior health advisor of Fletcher Senior Services, and which she has a little bio here. She has extensive experience with Merck, Sharp and Dohme, Lehigh Valley Hospital, St. Luke's Hospital, and Aetna. Now, Sharon also has credentials in Medicare insurance with companies including Sterling Life Insurance, United Healthcare, Bravo Health, Independence Blue Cross, and others. And also, Ms. Fletcher has attended numerous conservative rallies and conferences in Washington, D.C., learning the details of Obamacare and how Obamacare has its ramifications for seniors. Now, tonight, of course, Obamacare will probably be touched on, but I believe the mainstay is going to be on Romney Care. So I believe we will really enjoy the show tonight. And I also want to thank you folks who come in live tonight, but also those who are going to or are now listening to the show on the archives. And I appreciate you coming whatever time of the day it is to listen to the show. Now, I believe I am slotted to have her come on at 8:15, and I do have someone in the queue I see on the switchboard here, in which may very well be our special guest. But as we're waiting for other people to roll in, as they do, I will go ahead and open up the line, and if this is indeed Sharon, we can talk a little bit before we get on point with talking about Romney Care. So I'm letting in area code 347. Now, is this Sharon?
Hello?
This is not Sharon.
No, this is not Sharon. I'm very sorry. I'm actually, my name is Robert, and I saw this on a Facebook group called We the People, hosted by Michelle. And Kathy Cronin Chapman actually recommended your show.
Oh, great. Well, thank you very much for coming in. Yeah, I... Sharon will be coming on, she said, probably about quarter after 8. So, but you're more than welcome to stay on. And after she, you know, does her talking points, then she has agreed to answer questions that someone may have. So what I'll do is I'll close the other mics, and then when she's finished, I will open the mics back up for questions. How does that sound?
Yeah, sure. That's fine. As it happens, it just happens to be that I worked for nonprofit healthcare for 5 years in New York State.
Oh, great.
That's where I lived. I have a slightly different perspective on everything than most of the people because New York is somewhat unique in the way it delivers its healthcare. It is called the Cadillac of healthcare for a reason. It gives better quality healthcare to the low-income people than most other states in the country. And,
okay.
Whether it's good or bad is a subjective thing, because the truth of the matter is it's good for the people who need it, but it's bad for the state's economy, because that's the primary reason why New York State has the $50 or $45 billion deficit that it has.
Mm-hmm.
It's primarily due to Medicaid, and anyone that wants to look this up can. I'm a very fact-based person, as a matter of fact, and if you look it up, you'll see that for many years, New York received less distributions from the federal government on Medicaid reimbursements than most other states. That is in the process of being corrected, and that is the reason why New York State's running operating deficit will be lower in the years going forward. But the question then becomes, how are we all paying for this? And that becomes the issue, because obviously, as you know, healthcare is a very expensive item in the American budget.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Well, okay, definitely, hopefully we will have time for that. We also, at quarter till 10 this evening, we're also going to have an update by Kelly Mordecai, who is an author, and I would say somewhat of an expert of the fourth branch of government, which what people call the, he has a book out called The Hidden Fourth Branch about the federal grand jury, and he has an update on some cases that he's going to bring in at quarter till. So hopefully we can definitely have some time to discuss that further. But I do have someone else in the queue, so thank you very much, and I hope you stay on for the show to hear what you've got to say, and then hopefully we can touch back more on New York as well. So I'm going to go mute this mic, and I will be bringing you back in later when it comes to question time, if you'd like. And then
Thank you.
Also going to bring in an area code here, which is 610. Yeah, 610.
Yes, that's me.
Hi, this is Sharon, correct?
No, this is Kathy Chapman. Sharon,
Kathy, wow. I cannot quite remember what her area code is, because I didn't memorize the phone number. But I believe sometimes people call in early. I thought perhaps she did. I guess I could, I could look it up if I had to, so I don't keep holding the people off. But I mean, it's okay. I think people will. So, but yes, thank you very much for calling in, Kathy.
I just wanted to tell you that I was very happy that the gentleman you just spoke to weighed in, because I've been putting your the advertising for your show on all the Facebook pages, and I'm thrilled that the gentleman responded, and we'll stay on to listen to Sharon. She has some very factual information that I know everyone will appreciate. It's not focused on one state; it's more what our lives will be like after January, or could be. And in any event, I'm going to let you go. I don't want to take your airtime. So,
no, that's quite all right. I just said she's not on until for another 3 minutes.
Okay.
And yeah, she's going to talk about Obamacare and Romney Care, and
well,
pretty much when you're talking about Obamacare, you're pretty much just talking about a Romney Care, but on a national basis.
Correct. That's correct. I'm being told somebody just sent me a message that says that 1/3 of Hobo's information has been taken out, which I kind of have a hard time believing. But in any event, yeah, it should be a lively couple of hours for you. But,
well, great. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. And it's, aside from being a hot topic, it's one that's going to affect all of us eventually. And it doesn't matter whether you're 60 or you're 30. It's at some point you're going to get to that witching age, and you're going to need this information. So.
Exactly, and hopefully hopefully we'll be able to get a Congress and a Senate.
Correct.
That will do what's right, in my opinion, and get rid of Obamacare.
Well, I think that Congress should adopt whatever their people have adopted or have been forced to adopt, because I think what's good for the goose is good for the gander. You can't know what's going on unless you're experiencing it personally, so.
No, I agree. I was actually having a conversation about that today with my brother-in-law, when he was talking about the states. Not the states, but the Congress and the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
They have their own personal insurance. Medical insurance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly, that we pay for. But yet they don't have to, have the same kind of insurance that they want to put on the public.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
That's
exactly
it in a nutshell.
And plus, and of course, let's talk about them giving them raises and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to just be able to go out and give myself a raise. Wouldn't that be nice?
Or vacation days, or any, you know, you want to go over to Europe, you know, and say, oh, you've got to investigate, you know, blah, blah, and hop a plane to Europe. You know, it's the perks are endless in Congress.
Indeed. And I have someone else on hold, and I will put off the mic, Kathy, until it's time where she's going to be opening up for questions.
That's great.
You know, from the audience. And so let me try this one more time.
Very good.
So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Hold on. I'll hold
okay.
on.
Okay. Okay, great. Hello, and thank you for calling in.
Hi, it's Sharon Fletcher.
Hi, Sharon. Third time's a charm. I finally got it right because you're the third person who called in, and each time I was like, Sharon? Sharon? Because I didn't memorize your phone number.
Okay.
It might have been 610, but, I couldn't quite recall. I apologize for that.
That's quite all right.
Okay, great. So if you'd like to give a little overview of what we're going to be discussing tonight, or what you're going to be discussing tonight. I know there's a couple people, at least, who are going to be interested in asking some questions, and I appreciate you being open to that as well. So if we may begin with you, go ahead and, as I said, give a short synopsis of what we'll be covering tonight, kind of an outline, and then we can get down to the details after that.
Okay, tonight what I'm going to be discussing is Romney Care, and I'm going to go through what Romney Care did, what it accomplished. I'm going to also go over whether it should be implemented nationwide, whether it's bankrupting Massachusetts, whether it did anything to health care premiums. Some of the key differences between Romney Care and Obamacare, and some of the lessons that we really learned from Romney Care, and maybe what is the solution for today?
Okay, well, let's go down the line. Let's start of what is Romney Care?
Well, Romney Care was actually the first significant health care reform in the U.S. for decades. And essentially what Romney Care was supposed to do was supposed to provide all the citizens just in the state of Massachusetts with access to affordable health insurance and to do away with, you know, to do away with the free riders who are expecting the government and the taxpayers to pay for their health plans. And the plan seemed to be doing well, and over nearly 500,000 people who were previously uninsured became insured, and they did this without raising taxes.
I hear a button there somewhere. You said it seems to have been doing fine.
Well, there is a little but, because it seemed to be doing okay. But I think as we go on with it, it really is not doing as well as everybody anticipated that it would do. It doesn't actually do that. But we're going to get into that as we go through.
Right, we'll get into that. It doesn't actually do what the it was, you know, some part of it, what they were thinking to do. Okay.
So they got some of the concepts were really right, but the results didn't match up. Some of the results didn't match up. But anyway, Romney Care did accomplish several things in Massachusetts, and some of the things that it did do was 98% of the adults had medical insurance, 99% of children had medical insurance, and the national rate is 83%. Now, Texas, which for some reason does not do well with having medical insurance, they seem to be about one of the worst at 74%. And the other thing that Romney Care was, 76% of the employers were able to offer medical insurance to their employees. And that went up. The national rate was 60%. A few other things that it did is initially it exceeded its expectations. Romney predicted 1 to 1.5 billion dollars to the add 1 to 1.5% to the state budget to do this, and they were able to overall maintain this and actually keep it low. And it did have major drops in premiums, and it allowed for 40%. It allowed approximately 40% for those who bought their own insurance, and they were also given tax credits. But and it was also very popular. It was a very popular plan in the state of Massachusetts, and it was a bipartisan plan, and really some very well-known Republicans actually supported the plan. George H.W. Bush, Tommy Thompson, Mike Leavitt supported it, and when it went into the state to be voted on, it was supported by 198 of the House reps, and it was also supported by the state Senate. So everybody seemed to like it. But I say
At first, they seemed to be a great plan. But as many things that people say, oh, my gosh, this is great. Then when the proof is in the pudding starts to come out, that's when the problems start to arise.
That's when the problems start to arise, and that's when people start to feel maybe their freedoms are being taken away and their choices. And I think you might not see that in the beginning, but as you go along, you do see it. And as in this, with the Romney Care, there were several issues that Romney vetoed. One of the things that he didn't like was the employer mandate, and this required businesses with 11 or more people to provide health insurance benefits, and he felt that the struggling businessman in this category would not be able to offer this, and he felt it put pressure on them. So that was one of the things that he did want to veto. And then there were also minimum coverage options, and what this was is Romney wanted high deductibles, so that if you had high deductibles and how should I say this? And the state mandated benefits that were richer than this. But he was looking for some type of maybe a catastrophic care somewhere in there where people have high deductibles that protect them from things happening to them and from them losing everything. And to tell you the truth, that's what's happening today with most of the corporate health insurance. I don't know about you, but I pay $5,000 in my deductible. So I can see that that is happening. And the minimum coverage guidelines also, he believed that all consumers should choose their own features and benefits of their plan. And whether they wanted the high deductible or whether somebody needed a little more insurance, it was up to the individual to choose their own. He also vetoed the coverage of dental and vision care for Medicaid recipients. And the reason why he did this is because most employers don't cover this, and it would be an additional $75 million that would be saved. There is an opt-out option that Romney wanted Romney did encourage the individuals to buy their own insurance if they could afford it. But let's say something came up, they had to actually get a bond posted if they got sick or went into the hospital to ensure that they would pay for their bill. He also wanted everyone to pay for a portion of their care, so that way the care would not be considered free care. So he felt that if everybody paid a little bit for it, then they were still working and feeling good about themselves, providing health care for themselves. He wanted for the non-poor legal immigrants, if they had the special status for aliens. What happened here was he had vetoed that group from getting the insurance, but at a later time that was overturned and they compromised, and this group actually got subsidized. So it was partially, you know, reinstated.
Reinstated?
He partially reinstated the insurance for the special status aliens.
Special, and what would be the, I mean, can you elaborate on special status aliens?
Yes. They are the aliens, legal aliens, that come from a different country, and they have somebody here in the United States that promised to be legally responsible for their insurance and for the individual as long as they were in the country.
So this, the insurance provided for that?
Romney Care
would provide for those aliens to get that.
What it did was he wanted that overturned. He wanted to veto that, but what happened is they ended up reinstating part of that and doing like a reduced subsidy. So they cut back on what they were originally going to do. And then Romney did fight for a plan that allowed the employees to use the employer funds to go out and find their own insurance in the free market. And he also wanted to provide tax breaks rather than a penalty for those who had insurance. And then this is the part that, becomes a little bit foggy for me. And the reason it becomes foggy for me is because the way, I guess, the Democrats are always blaming George Bush for everything that happened for the last 20 years, you know. So that's why this becomes foggy for me, because I don't believe in passing the buck and blaming somebody else. But after Romney Care was passed, Governor Patrick set the state's premiums above a level that was affordable, and then he also added prescription drug coverage. And Romney supports the need for patients to provide documented proof of insurance coverage. And also in this plan, what he also supported was that patients should be encouraged, instead of going to the emergency room, they should be encouraged to go to their primary care doctor first. Because once you go into the emergency room, that is where the real costs are adding up. And that's what's going to cost people money. So they should go into their primary care doctor. Now, from personal experience, I can tell you that I had an instance where my blood pressure was very high, and it was about 10 to 6. The office didn't close until 6 o'clock, and my primary care doctor told me to go to the hospital. Well, they wanted to admit me to the hospital, and I refused that. The reason I refused it is because I knew I needed blood pressure medication to bring down my blood pressure, and once I had that, I would be fine. I told them I would come back and get the testing done, but as an outpatient. And it's kind of a double-edged sword there, you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes the primary care doctor won't work with you to see you. And at that time, my blood pressure was like 190 over like 160. I mean, it was really high. It wasn't any low number that I would play around with anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that we need that emergency room visit is something that even today we need to consider that and we need to consider, should we go to the primary care doctor, or should we, if the primary care doctor isn't there, they have a lot of these urgent care centers that are opening, or should we go to one of those urgent care centers and maybe pay a little less, or the cost would be a little less than they would be at the hospital or at the ER, if it's possible. Sometimes it's not, but sometimes it is. True?
Well, yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I've had an experience not that long, you know, long ago, where I mean, it was definitely an emergency room situation and not a primary doctor situation. So it's not as relevant. But what about the individual mandate portion of that? Where does that come in with all this?
Well, the individual mandate is that everybody in the state of Massachusetts was told that they must have health care. They must have health care insurance. And that's where that comes in. And now today conservatives dislike the use of the word individual mandate or health care mandate to expand insurance coverage. But once again, as I said, it had been previously noted Republicans supported these individual mandates. Maybe going back maybe 10 years ago or so.
The purpose of the individual mandates back then, at least what the logic behind it was, is, you know, where they're talking about no free riders.
That's,
you know,
exactly
where
right.
Where they're talking about, you know, well, you have to get everyone to pay. But unfortunately, with the, you know, when you have the individual mandate, what they didn't see and what they're seeing now is that the individual mandate, you know, if taken to the next degree, so to speak, then for one, you know, you're taking away people's freedoms having a mandate. Two is that an individual mandate, if universalized, is where you're going to come up with universal health care, which is obviously something that, you know, the people in the United States have railed against for a really long time, because they see that as a socialized or a European model for healthcare.
That is exactly right, and that's what they do see it as, and that's one of the reasons.
Well,
I think
it's true though. I mean, that's how they do it in Europe, correct?
That's how they do it in Europe. Everything is run through the government. Government run hospitals. It's a one payer system. Government physicians, etc. It's going to be, the long waits to get to see a doctor, the same type of things that you're going to see over in a socialistic country. Exactly right. And once again, I do believe that
something that Massachusetts is seeing in regards with Romney Care.
That's what they're seeing in Romney Care. And also, I think they're also seeing with the individual mandates that more individuals may be paying more than other individuals as a result of this. And this is...
Yeah, if you'd like to go into that, because this is directly related to the individual mandate, to go, you know, elaborate on that.
Yeah, no matter what you tell people that they have to pay, if they can't pay it, the people who can pay it are still going to have to pay more for those who can't. And that's no matter where you are or no matter what system you have that is set up as either an Obamacare system or a Romney Care system, that is what you're going to see. And what we can tell from Romney Care is that Romney Care definitely was not, it failed. And it failed for a lot of reasons. Number one, the cost was out of reach. And number two, you know, they weren't able to insure everybody. You know, that it wasn't able to happen. And once again, the taxpayers were paying for the free riders. It was still the same thing going on and on again and again. And actually what it says to me, that the more you give, the more people expect you to give.
Right.
And at some point in time, people have to assume individual responsibility for their health insurance, for their life, for whatever it may be. You have to be responsible for yourself.
Right, individual responsibility.
Individual responsibility and personal responsibility, that is correct. And it even goes back to, I have children, it even goes back to my children. If they come and say to me, well, Mom, you never did this with me. Well, you know what, they're 24 years old. Get over it. Go do it now yourself, you know. Go and do what I didn't do for you. You know, I mean, I gave them the best life that I could with what I had, but if that wasn't enough, they have to move on. It's their personal responsibility. And at the age of 24, I am no longer the scapegoat if they don't do something that they're supposed to do or that they think they should do.
Right, and RomneyCare is like at like 26 years old, correct?
Approximately.
Okay. Mm-hmm. No, we're not covering that. That's for another night, but I just want to make... Now, was RomneyCare 24 years old?
Excuse me?
Now, did RomneyCare, did they have anything that's like Obamacare but at 24 years old when it comes to that the parents are...
Oh, no. There was nothing in that. In Obamacare, it's the 26-year-old child. You have to insure your child up until they're 26. Now, I don't necessarily think that that's totally bad either, because what if you have a child going to school, getting their master's degree, and so on and so forth, it does have its benefits there. But on the other hand, I mean, in my now I'm dating myself when I say in my generation, but when I graduated from high school, I went to a 2-year college, then I got married, and I got a job at a pharmaceutical company. I went back to school and got my degree, and I was able to do this and maintain my own health insurance at the same time.
Right, yeah, because I know when I was in college, and I went back to college later in life too. Well, not too, but I mean, I went back later in life. But they had insurance where, I mean, the school itself. I mean, you had to pay for it, of course, but, well, yeah, you got to pay for an insurance. But you had your own health insurance that you could purchase through the college. Now, I'm not saying every university has that option, but there's a sense where, okay, well, the student goes and has, you know, takes their, you know, health insurance into their own responsibility, you know, by getting it through the school. And probably since, you know, it was at a lower cost than what it normally would be for an individual, you know, such as if they're using COBRA or something of that nature. Because, of course, you have, just like you have in your group insurance, you know, your group insurance, much more people contributing to it, thus lowering the cost.
That's exactly right. And the other thing with group insurance, too, a lot of companies today, what they're doing is, let's say it's a small business, or especially the small businesses, they are, and I'm talking about groups of like 20 and under, what they're doing is, anybody that has Medicare or is eligible for Medicare, they're being taken off of the group policy, because what will happen is that will cause the cost of the insurance policy for the working individual, for the under 65 individual, to raise, because that 65-year-old or 66-year-old will bring that up because of their age. So they take them off of that, put them on Medicare, you put them on a supplement, or you put them on a Medicare HMO or PPO, and what you end up doing for that corporation is you end up saving them maybe $7,000 to $10,000.
Hmm.
And that's something that a lot of people, I don't know, I think a lot of people don't know about it, or they don't do it, but that's another way that the businessman, the small businessman, can survive, because a lot of people now have to work past 65 because
right.
of the state of the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a good way of actually doing that, is by getting them off of the corporate policy. And that's, you know, that's some of the things that, you know, I've been experimenting with, and, you know, I talked to different groups about, and actually I spoke to a printer about this, and he was able to save about $12,000 a year. It took his insurance costs down $12,000 a year by doing that. And that's a lot. That's definitely a lot. But getting back to the Romney Care, and getting back to, I guess, personal responsibility, we all know that we have to accept it. And if we aren't accepting personal responsibility, and let's say we are on Medicaid programs, things like that, perhaps there needs to be training done at that point in time to get these people skilled to get off of, you know, give them skilled labor or teach them something, a skill or whatever, to get them back working so that way they are not a drain on society and a drain on the middle-class taxpayers. And I guess the other thing that I do believe in is with the Romney Care, the debt levels for Romney Care, for example, when this was done in Massachusetts, they had a balanced budget, and that's the key. A balanced budget is the key. And not only that, they received some federal money to the tune of $385 million a year. And they had pool funds set aside in the tune of $656 million. So they had money. Before they did this, they had money going into it.
Mm-hmm.
And not all of the states are that fortunate. Not all of the states have that deep, have pockets that are that deep.
Now? I mean, through my understanding, they're having some economic problems in Massachusetts, because of not just the state and also the individuals because of Romney Care.
Yes, they are. That's one of the reasons why the program is considered a failure. And I am going to, let me see, I am going to quote something from Lessons from the Fall of Romney Care. And this is titled A Double Failure. And what it says here is there's good reason for his change of position, Romney's change of position. The Massachusetts plan was to accomplish two things: achieve universal health insurance coverage while controlling cost, as Romney wrote in the Wall Street Journal. Every uninsured citizen in Massachusetts will soon have affordable health care insurance, and costs of health care will be reduced. In reality, the plan has not done either one of these two things. And then through another quote, I'm also going to tell you, this mandate was a significant infringement on the individual's choice and liberty. And I think that's big. And also stated here, it was a total failure. A total failure. So the Romney Care didn't work. It was a bipartisan bill,
mm-hmm.
and it still did not work. I don't think it will work now. And one of the reasons why they didn't do this nationwide is because if you look at the budgets in the different states, I mean, for example, well, we know what happened to California,
mm-hmm.
but we have a lot of states that are on the brink of bankruptcy. And unless you have a state that is going to be unless you have a state that has a balanced budget, and as you know, the country hasn't had a balanced budget in the last 4 years, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong on that, but I think...
It's been longer than that.
It's been longer than that. Well, anyway, they have...
It's probably been since... Yeah, probably hasn't had a budget, a true balanced budget since when Newt Gingrich was in the House of Representatives, when they had four balanced budgets.
Oh, right. So they haven't had, you know, a balanced budget. They haven't had a balanced budget for a long time. And that's why I worry. I mean, RomneyCare was set out to test in a state if it worked. Now, does it work nationwide? No, it doesn't work nationwide. The reason that it doesn't work nationwide, as I said, each state has different variables. And one of the reasons that they chose Massachusetts was because Massachusetts had a state that had most of their people were insured. But let's say you go to Texas and try it in Texas. It's not going to work in Texas. Definitely won't work in California. And that's because the rate of the uninsured people, you know, is a lot higher than it is in Massachusetts. So it's not, you know, it's not even set to be designed for a government takeover, which leads me to believe with Obamacare trying to go through with this in 50 states.
Right.
With the economy the way it is, and it will never work. And if RomneyCare didn't work, we can surely expect that Obamacare is going to have the same fate as RomneyCare, because in Obamacare they do want a single payer source, and that is definitely what their goal is a single payer source, and that's one of the things that I think. You know, I'm not saying that we have a perfect health system right now,
I need to be fixed.
Yeah, we need to tweak it. It's like everything else; it does need to be fixed, and I think we can do a lot of tweak. I think we can tweak it. But I don't think we have to tweak it so much to the point where it is socialistic medicine.
Go ahead.
You finish.
No, I was just going to say, I think you touched on this, you know, when you asked, you know, was RomneyCare ever supposed to be implemented nationwide? And I think you made a really good point that I don't know how many people are aware of is, you know, RomneyCare being the testing grounds, or Massachusetts being the grounds, but RomneyCare being, you know, kind of like the test prototype for Obamacare.
That's exactly right. It was the testing point for Obamacare. Now, the one thing that they did notice in Massachusetts was the fact that if you were an individual, I have my own small business, okay? So I'm an individual, mm-hmm. So I buy my own insurance. The individuals buying their own insurance found the premiums to be lower than in other states,
mm-hmm.
which is a good thing. But that can be done also by opening competition across state lines.
You were reading my mind, Sharon. You were reading my mind. That's exactly what I was getting ready to say is one of the ways to lower the cost would be, as you said, you know, increase competition by, you know, making it state, you know, across state lines. Exactly.
And in some of these states that I have already set up these insurance exchanges, they really have me concerned, these states. And I went to a conference a couple weeks ago, and there are many states that have chosen not to set up the insurance exchanges, and those states are going to fare better than the ones that have. Now, I know Pennsylvania has not made up its mind because we teeter a lot in Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I have anything to do with it, I will go out to Harrisburg and do a little march or something. But
that's what the Tea Party was railing against. You know, a big issue the Tea Party is railing against was Obamacare. But, of course, I think they could have railed against Romneycare, you know, too. But I digress. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. But you're right. Romneycare, I don't think Romneycare was any great highlight of this country. And I think the only thing that we can learn from that program was that it failed.
It set out to accomplish. Now, what I could say about Obamacare and Romneycare, that the, and this has a lot to do with liberal initiatives,
mm-hmm.
is that, you know, when you look at it on paper and you look at, quote unquote, the good that it could do, the intentions are noble.
Mm-hmm.
But intentions don't put food on the plate, you know, on the table. You know, and, you know, if you have something that you cannot afford. Now, even when I was young, I thought, you know, when people, they were talking about this for, you know, universal health care for a long time. You know, it's like, well, you know, in some instances I could see where, you know, it would be nice, but how can you afford it? One, you can't afford it, even if the nation was doing better. I don't know how affordable it would be. Two, as you mentioned earlier, and I think it's a very good point, is what does that do to people's individual freedom if you make a mandate that people have to do it?
That's exactly right. It's the whole aspect of freedom and choice. And that's why our parents and our ancestors, that's why they came over to America. And by the way, they went through New York, and they went through all the immigration processes that they had at that time, and, you know, they became legal citizens of the United States.
Very good point.
And that's why this country is based on freedom, on individual freedom, on freedom of speech, and freedom of choice, and we have so many things that we have, that our ancestors fought for, and that
life,
we...
Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right?
That's exactly
right.
Well,
you speak pursuit of property, but they kind of changed that, but you know what I mean.
Right. I know exactly what you mean. And essentially, this whole thing, you know, like Romneycare, if you want to look at Romneycare, how long is the Romneycare bill? 70 pages. How long is the Obamacare?
Well, just like anything that's, well, you know, that's come out of, you know, it's like 2,000 pages. Anything that's come out of, you know, the federal government, it's not just about what it's supposed to cover, the bill is supposed to cover. It's not all about health care.
No, and I think one of the biggest differences that I see between the two.
Well, can we backtrack for a second?
Sure.
Back, Sharon? Because I wanted to ask you this question, but I wanted to do it without interrupting you. Is
okay.
Now... Was Romneycare designed to be a government, you know, Massachusetts government takeover?
No, it was a pilot. It was a pilot program. It was a test program to see if it worked in Massachusetts, because not all states had the same circumstances going on. As we can see, each state is operated differently and independently, and each state has a certain amount of people that are maybe insured, not insured. Massachusetts happened to be a state that had a high level of people that had insurance. So for a prototype, Massachusetts was actually may have been chosen for that because maybe they felt that it would be profitable, and then maybe at that point in time they would think about trying it somewhere else. But the fact that it failed, shows us no matter what, this program isn't going to work, because as long as you keep giving, 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 and not getting anything back in return, people are going to keep taking. And we have to stop that.
So all the things that it would have accomplished that you mentioned earlier on in the show, you know, of course, it would have been good things. However, as a lot of these programs do, is they fail.
That's exactly
correct. So they'll have their initial successes, and it'll appear that, oh, yeah, that, well, this and Rami talks about this all the time. Oh, well, you know, but this worked and this worked and this worked. Well, okay. Well, and at a time it might have, but now look at it now. And, you know, is this part of, you know, bankrupting Massachusetts? And then there was a point that you're going to bring up, if you want to bring that back. And I apologize for backtracking on
that's
that.
That's okay.
But,
go ahead.
If you want to get back to the point you were discussing before I did that, go ahead.
Well, the thing that I wanted to, you know, bring up, and I guess it's because, I don't know, to me, healthcare is one of the most personal things that you can have. And having good healthcare is important, especially if you've been in situations where you've had sick children, or where you've had, you know, you dealt with sick relatives, or, and we all have had that somewhere in our lives. And you know what? We all don't know what the future is going to bring. So the idea with Obamacare, what it does that RomneyCare doesn't do is there's a 15-member board of unelected bureaucrats with great control over health care and benefits and risk rationing health care. Okay? So we have a panel now of 15 people, and what's going to happen is, let's say I go to the doctor and I have to have my hip replaced. God forbid, I think I'm too young for that. But Juan doesn't know anymore. But let's say I had to have my hip replaced.
Mm-hmm.
You would think my doctor would make that decision? No. That decision would have to go through this healthcare panel, 15 members that we don't know who they are. They could be doctors, lawyers, Indian chiefs. You know, I don't know who they are, you know. We
mm-hmm.
could, you know, they're all out there.
Probably lawyers.
Probably. And what they're going to do is they're going to take our quality life years and our age and then decide if it is going to be cost efficient for us to have that particular procedure. So they're going
mm-hmm.
to look at us and think, oh, what will these people contribute back to society?
Right. And if I may interject,
mm-hmm.
something that's like that, and I might be overstating this,
mm-hmm.
that sounds kind of like fascist Germany. I'm talking Nazi.
You are exactly right. And I, you know what? That is exactly what I said a couple weeks ago. I was talking, I was giving a lecture, and that is one of the things that I said. I said it reminds me of Germany and what they started to do. And actually, one of the other things that was brought out in the lecture was they were talking about Obamacare and its effect on the youth, and also on the under 65 population. And there was talk of experimental things being done. Now, I have a question for you, and I don't know if you can answer this one for me.
I will do my best.
Okay.
I'll have an answer, I just can't guarantee it's the right one.
Yeah, that's okay. We all have thoughts. But let's say, do you remember, and I don't know, maybe 5, maybe 10 years ago, everybody was going, was all concerned about these HIPAA regulations.
Right.
There was an episode in ER. I don't know if you even remember that.
I've never watched the show. I'm sorry.
That's okay. But anyway, I'm dating myself. Somebody.
Well, I'm familiar. No, I'm familiar with the show. Because of my dislike for hospitals and anything associated with hospitals, my dislike is when I was a kid, I spent a lot of time in hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
Now I have an aversion to them. So I don't even watch hospital shows on because it reminds me when I was a kid and all the time I spent in hospitals back then.
Well, yeah, I can definitely understand that. But on the show, they were talking about patients. Okay, and patient confidentiality. And with all this whole HIPAA thing came to be. But what I want to know now is the doctor's offices are collecting our personal data because when you
mm-hmm.
go into the doctor, you see them
right.
using a computer and you get a printed out sheet. And
mm-hmm.
I didn't want to go into the doctor, but I had
mm-hmm.
to go into the doctor because I, like you, one time had to go into the ER. Because I was dehydrated and they had to give me fluids and I had to spend the night.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to go back for a follow-up check. And my doctor gave me all this stuff. And he told me that this was all being placed in a national database.
Right.
From Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
So, which means how many people get to look at my personal information? What happened to HIPAA?
Maybe it's hippo now, you know, somewhere like a rhino mixed with a donkey. I don't
know. You know, I don't know what happened to it. I mean, what happened to our rights to privacy? Are they gone now with this, if this would come to be, or what happens to it? Not only that, he also told me that the hospitals have asked them to rate their patients from the healthiest to the sickest.
Interesting.
So what do you think that means?
Oh, yeah. You could see the writing on the wall with that. They're trying to categorize people. And I think, and maybe even cross-reference to what you said earlier, is to how much a person can contribute and compare it to how much care they're going to need.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's based on race or, as you are bringing up now, medical record.
That is exactly right. And in one of the things that's really interesting, too, is in one of the ways that RomneyCare goes, tries to fix some of this is through a centralized computer system. And, you know, between you and I, electronic health records just don't do it for me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just think my information should stay with my doctor, and maybe I'm old-fashioned, but that's how I think it should be. But on a lighter note, when I was explaining this to one of my friends, she said to me, oh, well, isn't that wonderful? They're going to rank the patients from the healthiest to the sickest. She said, and that means the sickest people will get cared for first.
That's not what's going to happen in my
opinion. And my eyes just went wide, and I knew it was
that's
better for me
the,
not to say anything.
Right, I understand.
You know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
That's
because
not exactly, but I surmise. That
mm-hmm.
the opposite would be more likely to be true.
Well, that's true. A friend of mine is a juvenile onset diabetic, had a heart attack last year because he had dye interjected through his heart. His kidneys went into renal failure. He had kidney dialysis.
God.
Then he had kidney dialysis and he did end up coming home, and he's in pretty good shape now, though. But let's think about this. He's 58 years old. If he needed to get a kidney transplant, where would he be on that list?
Good
and
point.
That's what we have to wonder. Or would they take somebody like him, and would he be used for experimental uses? I'm not sure.
Hmm.
You don't know. And that's just the whole premise, you know, that's the whole idea behind this Romneycare. The government has too much control over
right.
our everyday life. And
too much control and record. I mean, really, for the government to know all that information about you, you know, then go ahead.
And not only that, you know what else they're going to have? They're going to have your little checking account number right in that little database computer down there. So if they want to withdraw the funds from your account, they can. And if you have the exchanges, for example, if these exchanges, let's say, come through Pennsylvania,
mm-hmm.
let's say I lose my job, which I can't because, you know, I work for myself now, but let's say I lose, you know,
right.
I would lose my job. Okay, the government, I would have to go to Harrisburg, would have to report to the government that I lost my job and that I no longer have health care coverage. That goes all the way down to the computer in Washington, D.C., down to those IRS agents that are going to go into my checking account and hit me up. You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean.
So, yeah, if you don't get this insurance, then we're going to get you to pay the penalty.
Right.
And what they do is they take it out through your tax. Well, yeah, they either take it out of your account, as you said, or they count it as a tax penalty. That you
right.
have to, if you have anything coming back at the end. Either, one of two things, correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm really not as versed in this setup as I'd like to be, is that through my understanding is the way they would take these funds out, either A, as you've mentioned, maybe straight out of account, or two, if you get a refund or, end of the year refund, they would deduct it from there, or if you owed the government anything, then they would just add an additional amount to what you owe the government for taxes. Is that the way they would do it?
That's exactly the way they would do it.
Okay.
And I said, the Romneycare bill is so innocent compared to what's in the Obamacare. And you know, I know why
that's how they do it. They make it look innocent, so then when they, you know, quote unquote, tweak it, then it's not innocent anymore. You know, I mean, as you said, it was kind of the prototype for
right.
If Romneycare, you know, if it's, you know, innocent, you know, as that description, well then it's, you know, it's child Obamacare must be.
No.
You know, neither one of them really, but yeah. But that's the linearity to it. That's, you know, where you could kind of, you know, regress and look where, you know, from Obamacare, regress back to Obamacare and then move yourself forward, to, you know, to see, you know, the process on which you can really say that Obamacare really did stem from Romneycare.
Exactly right. Only they expounded on it and they went a little bit crazy with it, I think. I mean, I just think some of the things that they are presenting to us in Obamacare is inexcusable. For example, when I turn 65, I am going to be given counsel, end-of-life counseling.
Ugh,
every 5 years.
That drives me nuts.
Now, don't you know? It would be all I needed is one. All you need to do is do it one time. I don't need to hear it every 5 years. Because when people are ready to leave this world, they seem to know that. They know that. And I know this from personal experience. I took care of my mother for 25 years. She fell. She was in a hospital for 10 days. She went to rehab. She said, "Sharon, bring me home." And within 2 weeks, she died.
Wow.
So
I'm sorry to hear that.
They know when they're going to go. And they know that they don't want more treatment because they are not productive. They can't help you. And many hospice nurses will tell you the same thing. If they have a hospice patient, these hospice people know when they are no longer not functioning and can't give, and they want to go. So it doesn't have to, you know, it doesn't have to be end-of-life counseling. But, you know, I guess, you know, there are so many things in here that violate so many people's, you know, the right to their religious choices and things like that. It's just absolutely appalling.
And that brings me to a point I want to bring up earlier, and I know this is a big contention among conservatives, is the $50, in Romneycare, the $50 abortions.
Yeah, I'm a pro-lifer. To be honest with you, in my opinion, life is sacred. And if you're giving a $50 abortion, then what that means to me is that you are using abortion as a method of birth control.
Mm-hmm.
Well, birth control is entirely different than abortion. And I don't think there has been enough education in the high schools or enough fear put into children. Sometimes you need to put fear into children so that they learn right from wrong. And
I agree with that. My dad was very efficient in doing that.
You know, I
you're
don't
bad,
really,
you get the belt. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm
just joking.
I just sometimes think that you have to, when you're raising your children, I taught my children, and what I did, you know, I instilled a certain amount of fear in them. And, you know, maybe what I did to them was not quite right when they asked me questions, but I thought they were too young to be asking me questions at 13.
Mm-hmm.
So at 13, they had fear. When it became 16, I gave them the right response. But sometimes you do have to instill fear as a parent, and you have to tell them that, you have to teach them abortion is not a method of birth control.
No, and I had something that, you know, that shocked me one time recently. Now, you know, just to put it out there, I do not consider, now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I do not consider myself pro-life because I believe in the death penalty. And through my understanding, people who say they're, you know, who say they're pro-life are against the death penalty.
Well, you see, I believe
but
in the golden rule.
I'm pro-capital punishment, though.
I'm pro capital punishment too, but I don't think a baby has a choice. And
No. I'm anti-abortion for certain,
mm-hmm.
and I've wrote a paper on it, a research paper as well, showing how the violence psychologically, you know, affects the woman, you know, which is something that doesn't get touched on a lot. But anyway, so you know what I find interesting, since we're on the subject, and then I want to get your comments on this. I find it amazing because we're talking about abortion and birth control, and if there's going to be these government healthcare systems to provide those, what I know is I'm sorry, my daughter is interrupting me, and I need to close the door.
Oh, that's okay.
But my daughter's 10, and I got something from the hospital, and it said, "Oh, well, you should do this, and one of the things it said is, talk to your child about sexuality." And I'm like, are you kidding me? Talk to my 10-year-old daughter about sexuality? What? I don't want to bip him upside the head. Like, what do you mean talk about my 10-year-old daughter about sexuality? But I digress. But the point I wanted to get to is that I find it nauseating, to be honest, but something that doesn't quite make sense to me is that you have all this, you know, government subsidizing, you know, abortions or, you know, contraceptives and stuff like that. So if you want to get rid of a child, okay, there's government ways to help you out. But if you want to have a child, you know, for mm-hmm. fertility, some kind of fertility mm-hmm. treatments, mm-hmm. well, then you're not going to get any help from the government there. That really, that's a pet peeve of mine.
Well, and the other thing too, and I'm going to go back to your 10-year-old daughter. The rule of thumb there, and this is what I always went by, until they ask you the question, you don't tell them anything.
Yeah, I haven't been asked any questions.
So if you're not asked any questions, you don't give them any answers. And if they ask the question at 13 or younger, you scare them.
Yeah, luckily I haven't heard any any questions. So that's good.
Yeah, so you know,
I mean, she has crushes on boys and stuff, but I mean, you know, it's nothing where, you know, I'm getting any questions. I'm not going to be comfortable answering or get your mom.
No, that's really the key. The key is that the parents have to talk to the kids and they know what's going on. And not
right,
only
right.
that, as a parent.
No, I'm just joking about saying going to your mom's.
Yeah. The thing is that if you've ever driven carpool with kids, oh, my God, you find out what half the community is doing.
Mm-hmm.
Not only your kid, but everybody else's kid. And, you know, kids should not even be thinking abortion. And really, they shouldn't be thinking sex at that age. But once again, it comes back to social media and what's
mm-hmm.
out there and the nudity in many of these primetime TV shows that's taking place. And parents, you know, parents not doing anything about it. And the other thing, sometimes parents don't practice a certain religion. And it doesn't matter what religion you are. I'm not, you know. But as long
mm-hmm.
as you live by the golden rule, do unto others as you would have others do unto you, I think that's a fair assessment of how people should act on a daily basis. And that's why when you said about capital punishment, well, let me tell you something. If somebody ever did hurt one of my children, I would certainly want them punished for it.
Yes, yeah. I mean, yeah, and I actually made the same point because part of the research project I worked on, you know, compared capital punishment with abortion, because what it was a paper at viewing abortion as an issue of violence
mm-hmm.
and seeing it through that prism. Because a lot of folks, in my opinion, and I'm not saying you're you're pro-life folks.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying just a lot of your pro-choice or what I call pro-abortion folks, they do not look at the abortion issue as a issue of violence or as a violence issue.
Mm-hmm.
They see it, you know, through reproductive issue or woman's issue or something of that nature. It's like, well, you're talking about a violent act. And one of those, and I know we're going off on a tangent here, and, you know, this isn't about abortion per se, you know, but the one thing, part of the research is, you know, the same people who, because I did surveys, and the same people who were against, like, torture over, like, in Abu Ghraib, they're talking about, oh, well, the torture, they shouldn't torture these people, are the same people who are like, oh, yeah, go ahead, abortion's okay. Even though some of those ways they have abortions is literally ripping the limbs off these fetuses or putting just their head out, and I'm
mm-hmm.
not even going to go to the rest. You guys know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Or injecting a saline solution where basically they burn to death by salt. You know, the salt
mm-hmm.
burns them to death. Now, that's okay. That's okay to some of these folks. But, oh, my gosh, you know, don't put a female underwear on a Muslim's head.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, it's like really the inconsistency, and then what I would say hypocrisy there is something I literally could probably talk to hours for. We won't, because I digress off the point. But that's just how I think about that. So, go ahead. But
you know what? The other thing too is the media out there today is very liberal. We have a very liberal media that really has no standards. They really don't. The only standards that I ever see are maybe with Sean Hannity or, you know.
Yes, please don't say Rush Limbaugh. Rush Limbaugh is banned from this show. Well, okay, I talked about him, but not in a good light. I'm not a Rush Limbaugh fan.
No.
After what he did in the Florida on his show the day of the Florida primary, but Yeah.
No, I wasn't going to say him. But, I mean, I think I was watching Sean Hannity last night and his interview with Paul Ryan. He does some good things. I mean, he has some good to the down, you know. They get right down to the point, and your questions are answered if you're confused. Actually, you know, I was an O'Reilly fan, too, but I've turned – I'm starting to like Hannity much better than O'Reilly because, O'Reilly is going center on me.
Oh, big time. And, you know, even in the early on in the primary season, I mean, you know, I've seen how the O'Reilly factor and then later on the whole of Fox News, or I call Fox News, F-A-U-X, news, is, you know, we're shilling for Romney, you know, and... You know, I called him out on it in an email, and he actually put it on the show. But of course, he said I had a, you know, I was having an emotional attachment, and I think he was kind of not by saying it, saying that it was a call to personality, more about me agreeing with what you know, someone like Newt Gingrich stands for.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a couple callers in here waiting to come in, and I know I told the audience that you'd be willing to take any questions. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to open up some of the mics to the people who've been holding on for a while. So is that okay with you?
Sure, that's fine.
Okay, great. I'll go to the person who has been on hold the longest,
okay.
And then I'll go from there. So here's another 610 who I know has been on hold for a while, and see if they have anything they'd like to ask. Yeah, 610 or the other 610?
It's Kathy Chapman. I'm in Bethlehem. And I just wanted to make a statement rather than a question, is that I think Obama is so confident that he's going to be president next year that he has already gotten the IRS in place to collect the penalties that he anticipates.
That doesn't surprise me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why there's an increase in the government jobs.
Correct.
If you look... like on Indeed.com, or you should see how many government jobs are available in the Medicare field and in the IRS field, and a lot of the government jobs are out there. But they're the only kind of jobs that are available.
Right, and which will increase, as you said, the government jobs. It just
I'll tell you what, folks, is I hate to say it, but he might very well be right. Because I truly think, feel in my heart of hearts that if Romney does become the nominee at the end of the day, Monday or whenever that is, then I truly think that we will have another 4 years of Obama.
Correct.
And I think the only way to stop Obamacare after that, here's the thing. In my opinion, if Romney becomes the nominee after Monday, the way to stop Obamacare is to make sure that the House and the Senate does not belong to the Democrats but to conservatives. And I'm not necessarily even saying Republicans.
That's exactly right, conservatives.
You're right.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that is how you will stop Obamacare if Romney becomes the nominee.
I have a question for both of you.
Okay.
What do you think of, I guess, the Missouri senatorial candidate, Aiken?
I've heard a little bit about that. I really want to spend some time doing more research on it. I know Barbara Haney, which is a friend of mine, but she's not going to be able to do a lot of talking lately because I know she's been real busy. So I'd like to converse with her for, and you know, she's got a lot to say on the matter.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd like to give up the floor to Kathy if she knows more about that than I do.
Oh, thank you, Robert. No, I'm not.
You're
I'm
welcome.
Not as familiar with him at this point. I know his name is being thrown around. Not sure. I can't actually keep up with what is going on with him. I've really been focused on Tampa, and every minute the RNC changes a rule or an idea, and that's really where my focus has been, honestly. That and the impending hurricane in Florida.
Too.
Yeah.
Me too. Well, okay, ladies, then, if you don't mind. Oh, go ahead.
Let me just say something.
Mm-hmm.
This senatorial candidate has been leading in the polls for many, for a long time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had a blooper. He said something that was out of context, and he probably shouldn't have said it, and he should have apologized. And everybody is telling him that, you know what, he needs to pull out of the race and everything else. But they're not taking a look at his record and of the accomplishments that he has had and how he has voted. And I think that, you know, I haven't heard, I don't know, I think everybody has made a blooper every once in a while, and Joe Biden has made many. And this guy has apologized. I think the big thing now is to let it go and just look at his track record. If his track record doesn't meet up to the performance standards that we would like it to, then I say perhaps he should get out of the senatorial race.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't think that, dividing people here would be the right thing to do, because we need his senatorial seat. So I think we have to, look into that.
Glad you pointed that out. Aiken,
A-I-K-E-N, correct?
Yes.
Okay, well, yeah, that definitely could warrant, a show. And maybe, I know Thursday nights I usually cover, of course I haven't lately, environmental issues, but since the convention has been, is coming so close, that I'll probably a couple of weeks before I cover that. But also, if you ladies don't mind, I do have someone else on hold I'd like to bring in to see if they have any questions. And Kathy, please, if you'd like, of course, stay on the line here, and I won't put anyone on mute. Here's the gentleman out. So 347, all right, it could be a ma'am. 347, what would you like to chime in for tonight?
Yeah, hi, how are you? Am I live now?
You are live. Well, I hope you're live, or else I'm hearing ghosts, and that's not...
I called in before, actually. My name is Robert Ruvain. I called in before.
Yeah, great.
And
I'm glad you called back.
I had to get off the line. I'm sorry. Dinner was awaiting for me.
I understand that.
I worked, as I said to you earlier, I worked for a nonprofit healthcare in New York, in New York for 5 years. And in New York, I have a slightly different take on the healthcare situation, but I have a question, or actually a statement, actually. If, let's say, just as a theoretical argument, Obamacare and RomneyCare are not that much different, I will give you a very simple reason why we should still vote for Governor Romney to be the next president of the United States with that argument taken into consideration. Because what you're not realizing is that there is such a difference between the two philosophies, between the Democrats and the Republicans with regard to foreign policy, is so striking that it's frightening. And since I am very up on foreign policy because I'm an advocate for Israel, I can tell you without even thinking twice that given that opportunity, and second Obama term is devastating in terms of what he's going to do for foreign policy, because he's not going to have anything to fear because the election will be over already.
So I agree with you.
If you take the health care coverage debate out of the issue and say, okay, so now neither of them is great, but which way do we go? My answer is that you go for the Republicans, because a second Obama term, he's going to have nothing to stop him from doing whatever he wants to do, and that's a frightening scenario. And it's not only about Israel, it's about a lot of other things also, because he doesn't understand the economics of foreign policy. Look at what happened a few months ago in Greece.
Mm-hmm.
Look at what's happening with the European Union. Mr. Romney has a background in finance. He understands a much better understanding. He doesn't have to go to a liberal council of economic advisors. If you look at the backgrounds of the Council of Economic Advisors that's surrounding President Obama right now, most of them don't have business backgrounds. Most of them have liberal academic backgrounds. That's a far cry from a knowledgeable business background where they'll know how to apply good, common-sense business practices. At the same time, understand that the United States of America has to maintain its sovereignty as far as the capital of the world economically.
Well, let me chime in if I may. Two things. One, it's you know, well known on the show, so I'm not saying anything that no one here doesn't already know, is there's many reasons why I will not vote for Romney. I just can't, in my by principle, vote for him. If someone feels that in their conscience that they should, well, that's their own individual choice. This is America, you know.
Well, you know,
Sammy,
whose show Succeed Yours has
right.
been a leading advocate for bringing Newt to the convention and having an open convention where you have a broken
right.
convention. And I've actually called into his show a few times because I'm supportive of Newt. The only problem is that last night Newt put on his website that he's pledging his delegates now.
Well, let's back up. He's released his delegates.
Right.
I read the letter.
Mm-hmm.
I read the letter, and indeed, he released his delegates.
And
well,
that's
he,
very disappointing.
No.
Well, yeah, and it is. But here's my point on that. If Romney does indeed get the nomination, all I am saying is that I personally will not vote for Mitt Romney, and I know a lot of people because of the principles that they hold. Because they've seen what Romney and the RNC has done in this. I mean, I've been a loyal, hardworking Republican
mm-hmm.
for all my adult life. And even while I was a child, you know, I'd be putting out signs and volunteering, being one of those boots on the ground. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
I have never been so disgusted with the Republican Party as I am now.
Okay.
And so for me, it's about principle. And I will not vote for.
So then if you're not going to vote for Romney, you're going to vote for President Obama?
No, I plan on, see, here in Ohio, I have a pen in which I color in a box on who I vote for.
Oh.
What that pen is going to do in the presidential part is it's going to write in Newt Gingrich's name. Because
okay.
that is the person I support. That is, that's
okay.
it. That's my principles. I cannot, at the end of the day, say I voted for someone who, you know, offends, you know, my very core,
mm-hmm.
and vote for him. That's what I'm saying. If you, sir, or anyone else feels in their conscience that they must vote for Romney, that is your choice.
Well,
you know?
I mean, it's a difficult choice between one of two people. If I had my preference, if I had the opportunity to speak to Mr. Gingrich before he made that decision last night, and of course, obviously, we don't have, aren't privy to any behind-the-scenes conversations which he may have had, which may have led up to his decision, I would
mm-hmm.
certainly have argued passionately with him not to do it, and I would have said, let it go to a convention, let it go broker, because you have enough enthusiastic supporters where I believe that at the end of the day, he might have come out victorious. I think it's going to be an interesting convention, but I think
yes.
at the end of the day, Newt, as a, first of all, on his foreign policy, Newt is so sound on his foreign policy. He is a historian.
Mm-hmm.
He
mm-hmm.
knows
as
more
he
about foreign policy than most people. He can teach most people foreign policy. He's a historian, and you can argue subjectively anything you want. You can't argue against facts. You can spin a fact, but you can't argue against it. And the man knows his facts. Anytime you start talking to him, he can give you a historical perspective on you name the country. Mm-hmm. He'll give you the historical perspective going back hundreds of years. So from that perspective alone, I mean, like I said, personally, I wish he would have rescinded it.
He's been strong-armed by the RNC.
I understand that. Did you look at the platform they came out with today?
I didn't see today's. What I'm always working on is his 132 delegates. That's what he was.
No, if you go online and look at the Republican National Committee, what it approved as its platform today, I think it's going to be an eye opener, and I think you're going to be quite disturbed.
Oh,
I'm sorry to say.
Quite discouraged? It wouldn't surprise me. Some are saying, there are a lot saying that after this convention,
mm-hmm.
and if not after this convention, then after the election, they are leaving the Republican Party. They're
mm-hmm.
done with it. They're tired of it. And if they see this platform that you just told us about, and then when they go and they look at it, and if it's as disappointing as what you're alluding to, then that's going to give them even more reason to leave the party. And frankly, that's my stance at this point, you know, too, that I'm planning on. I mean, I've got, you know, campaign people. Can we put a sign in your yard? Can we put a sign in your yard? Can we put a sign in your yard? I said, wait till the convention. And the first thing I ask them is, when they call, did they endorse Mitt Romney? And if they said yes, I said, well, then they cannot put a sign in my yard. And I got one guy, you know, who he hasn't come out and endorsed Romney, you know. But if the RNC goes ahead and pushes this and Romney becomes the nominee, then I will be calling them back, or when they call me back, and I'll say, there's one sign that is and will remain in my yard right now and through until November, and that is a Newt Gingrich sign. Even after the convention, even throughout the whole part, the Newt Gingrich sign will stay in my yard. Mm-hmm. Because that, as I said, no matter how this thing comes out, Monday or whatever after the convention, mm-hmm. Newt Gingrich is my nominee.
Mm-hmm.
He's my nominee.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing that's going to change that.
I heard you guys talking a few moments ago about something in Florida. I'd like to bring up one point, speaking about Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
In Florida, because as I said again, I am very involved in certain aspects of the community. In Florida, there's a Republican who won his primary and is going up against Debbie Wasserman Schultz, who's the same congressman in Florida in that district.
Mm-hmm.
And I cannot emphasize how important it is that she be that she is defeated in her
re-election. I agree. Oh, I agree. I don't know anyone who doesn't.
Because in Florida, and this made the papers in Florida, and even made the papers in New York, at her calling, she had things done, events at synagogues done, which violate the law, and how they got away with it, I don't know,
mm-hmm.
but it was written about, and I don't know why the synagogues are still, you know, they're not getting into any trouble for things that she forced upon them,
mm-hmm.
but it is imperative that the Republican challenger succeed her in office this year, because the Republican challenger, I don't remember the name of the Republican challenger, I just posted it actually on my Facebook group, because I moderate a couple of Facebook groups, I posted it the other night,
mm-hmm.
but I looked on this Republican challenger's website, and I looked at their issues page, and I found how they stand on their issues,
mm-hmm.
and as soon as I saw it, they gave clear indications of who they support and who they don't support. And I absolutely encourage people down in that area of Florida to please vote for Debbie Wasserman Schultz out of office.
Yes, I'm thinking that they are. There is a tremendous amount of people who are on the same page as you.
The only thing that I do worry about is when, you know, I like Newt Gingrich as well. I thought Newt Gingrich would have been an excellent president. He was probably the best candidate up there, best debater, everything else, most
mm-hmm.
knowledge. But now we come down and we have, you know, the two candidates, whether, you know, Romney is going to make it through the convention or not, as the Republican delegate or not. But I think the real evil here that we have to defeat is Obama.
I couldn't agree more.
Well, here's the thing on that, what conservatives and frankly libertarians are considering when they're considering whether they're going to vote for Romney or not. There are some that agree or disagree that are thinking that for conservatives and libertarians, and some people might even, you know, want to, you know, hang me up on my toes for saying this. Okay, but there are some conservatives and libertarians that are saying it would be even worse for the conservative and libertarian ideology, for conservatives and libertarians, okay, and for them getting conservative and libertarian ideology and ideas, I should say, you know, pulled through if Romney was to win the presidency, and this is why. Because Romney, it's not just Romney that's bad for conservatism and libertarianism. And a Romney presidency would be bad for him, because the RINOs and the Republican Party have been trying to put a moderate Republican in the White House for 40 years now, unsuccessfully.
Mm-hmm.
And the way libertarians and conservatives have been marginalized in this mm-hmm. election season is beyond the pale. unprecedented. And if Romney was to get the nominee, especially in the fashion in which the RNC is doing to get him there, if he does indeed win the presidency, then that some are thinking, not some but many, are thinking that that would be the death knell of conservative influence,
mm-hmm.
at least on the national stage when it comes to the presidency, for a very long time to come. Because then the moderates and the rhinos in the Republican Party can come back to the libertarians and conservatives and say this: we don't need you anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need you. We can marginalize you in the way that we did this election cycle, and we can do this again and defeat you. And defeat you. And that's what they're doing. They're defeating the conservatives and the libertarians in this party, okay, by putting up Romney. They've been pushing Romney for, you know, a long time.
For the elections, yeah. Right.
Right. And so that's why conservatives say, you know what, if Obama wins, we just let's have a Senate and a House who can, you know, pretty much box Obama in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if they're strong, one of the things if you get a House and Senate, okay, both by conservatives that could box him in, you got to get rid of Rince Priebus, and you got to get rid of Boehner.
Yeah.
Those two
he's got to go. I do believe
those
Boehner
two.
Does have to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Those two.
But here's my problem with that philosophy. Here's my problem with that philosophy. And I'm going to use the state of Pennsylvania, of all places, as the perfect example of what I remember hearing the governor of Pennsylvania saying one day before the 2008 election. Okay, Pennsylvania is a very large state.
Mm-hmm.
And it is such a large state. In eastern Pennsylvania, you have one political ideology. In western Pennsylvania, you have another. Mm-hmm. And there's the governor, I think it was the governor of Pennsylvania, that said there's such a cross spectrum of ideologies politically almost represents the American heartland, because it's such a big state with so vast political differentiation in people's opinions.
Mm-hmm.
So now, my point here is that with respect to the President of the United States, there's one person running. When it comes to Congress, you have how many seated Congress people that are up for re-election? There's so many variables as to what could happen in Congress. Right now, the Republicans have the majority in the House. And the
mm-hmm.
Democrats, I think they have a slim majority, but not much. In this election coming up, there is no way to accurately forecast how many Republican and Democratic seats are actually going to turn over until after the election. You can predict, and all the national polls can predict whatever they want, but
mm-hmm.
it's not a true barometer. And then there are individual races that are going to be very hotly contested. And depending upon how each one falls out, depending upon the districts they're running in, depends upon how the math is going to lay out going into the next year, going into 2013. So it is so unpredictable, no matter how you pull it, you can't really forecast. Because believe it or not, like everything else, the weather is a determinant in a lot of cases. The weather determines
sure.
a lot of things in a lot of cases.
I understand that, you know, and I agree with a lot of those points. But, and I have someone on hold who's supposed to be giving an update in a couple minutes. So, 530, I see you're on hold, and I'd like to have you in a couple minutes for the update I believe you're calling in to give us, and then we'll go from there. But some of the points you put out, I agree with. However, where in Romney's record does it show that he will do anything that will help the conservative and the libertarian cause? He has nothing to show. He's gone to a lot of lip service, saying I'm extremely conservative. But then when you shut out folks like Newt Gingrich, okay, folks like Sarah Palin,
that's exactly right.
Wes, if you what do you think of Santorum?
I love Santorum.
Oh, I like Santorum socially. You know, I like some of his social policies. But what I'm saying is when you shut those folks out, so if Santorum's going to be talking at the convention, so they're throwing in, what, a token conservative?
But he's
no
match for Obama if there was a national stage. I don't believe that Santorum can win on the national stage.
No, Santorum can't win this year, but Santorum has a political future ahead of him, and his conservative principles are very strong, and what I like about him is he doesn't waver.
Well, and that's another reason why some conservatives, and I won't say many on this point, but there are some conservatives who think, you know, if Romney does not win, if Romney gets the nomination and he does not win, then that will set things up for a 2016 presidential election to try to get conservative in. Because if Romney would win, it would be so hard in a convention to unseat an incumbent president, you know, in the party, which, you know, you could possibly be stuck with a moderate Republican as president for 8 years. But folks, I promised I would let – I'll keep the lines open, mm-hmm. but I promised I'd let this gentleman in because he's got a very important update, I believe, tonight. And so 530, here you are. Thank you for coming. Is this Kelly?
Well, hey Robert. How are you? Kelly Mordecai here. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I was just listening to this debate. The Huff Post indicates the electoral votes they're predicting right now: 257 for Obama, 191 for Romney. He's hurting, so that's rather interesting. By the way, I'm done with the Republicans, how they've crapped on a lot of people. I'm a registered libertarian and go for Gary Johnson if Romney gets it. So unless maybe Gingrich or Santorum, but I, you know. Anyway, I'm just frustrated, just like you are. All right, I got to get you to the breaking news. First, a little bit scary story, if you will. New York Times reporters Joe Becker and Scott Shane broke this story the end of May that Obama is assembling a kill list. Essentially, him and a bunch of top security staff were meeting in, you know, Tuesday mornings for coffee rolls and who we're going to kill, and then we put them on a list. Some of these people are Americans, and of course they're saying counterterrorism force, and they're saying Al-Qaeda, yada, 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 but they're American citizens, which means due process of law is being denied. This is not a declared war per the constitutional requirement. He has no authority to be doing this. Well, entering a grand jury, a gentleman by the name of Donald Sheldon, he is the chairman of the Broward County Libertarian Party in Florida. On Monday, he attempted to submit a complaint to a federal grand jury over this matter. Of course, I helped him since I wrote the book, The Hidden Fourth Branch. And he kind of got the runaround, but we're coming back again. We're going to have a conference call tomorrow night. We're going to strategize to make sure that this complaint gets into the hands of the grand jury. Now, what's the significance of this historically? Well, the Watergate boys and Nixon, if you remember Watergate, mm-hmm. if you've ever watched the movie All the President's Men, the Watergate boys were investigated by multiple grand juries, and eventually even someone got indicted for committing perjury before a grand jury. And these results went over to the U.S. Congress for the House Judiciary Committee, voted items of impeachment. Nixon resigned. Mm-hmm. And you know, bugging an office is one thing, but when you are committing a federal crime, it would be a felony. It's called conspiracy to commit murder. Mm-hmm. The underlings of Obama, his minions, or basically, we'll just call them subordinates, they're just like all the president's men in the Watergate situation. They're actively committing crimes, and that's where grand jury can get involved. And what we first want to do when the grand jury gets a complaint is we want them to issue a subpoena to get the kill list. Then secondly, who was there at the meeting? Mm-hmm. Let's have a talk. Let's find out who's involved. And hopefully the grand jury will know their power and they'll start indicting people for this basic felony, felonious act. And that's what we're going with this. And the reason why I'm talking with you, and of course your listeners, is to make them aware, help them become aware that we are going to ask a lot of Americans to do the same thing. We're going to ask them to get a hold of their, go to the website, of course, Hidden Fourth Branch, download the complaint and submit it to your federal grand jury. And the logic is real simple. As we flood congressmen with letters, so can we flood grand juries with complaints. Now, there is another little problem, and that is getting the complaints to the grand jury. Well, there's already federal codes, 18 U.S.C. Section 3332 that state, when a citizen requests a complaint to go to the grand jury, the federal attorney is required by that statute to inform the grand jury of the matter. However, according to William Thoreau of Wallace America, his observations of Darrell Issa, he's on the Government Reform Committee, Congressman Darrell Issa, Eric Holder, the Attorney General, Supreme Law Enforcement Officer of the Land, has directed federal attorneys to not inform grand juries of complaints received. Mm-hmm. The bottom line is anybody who opposes the grand jury is saying, I don't want accountability. And so this is a really a bit of a mess. We've got some other strategies. We've got some attorneys helping us out, some paralegals. And our petition, our right to petition, under petition for redress of grievance, the Supreme Court has made very clear that this is an absolute right, the absolute right to petition. There was a case in Florida last year that the Supreme Court said, again, the right to petition is absolute. When a federal attorney has blocked this petition to a grand jury, he has just committed a civil rights crime. We have some other strategies to make sure the complaint gets to the grand jury so they can act and do in their present state what happened during the Nixon-Whitewater situation, Watergate situation. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of a quick update, and I'm sure there's a lot of Americans love to get involved and do this. And so to kind of get your mind aware of this great power of the grand jury, you can just go to HiddenFourthBranch.com, take a look-see, and just kind of, you know, mull over some things. There's actually a specific page called Got Birth Certificate. It's got a funny cartoon on there you like about Obama. But, yeah, this is kind of an update of what we're doing, and as we progress, we'll let you know. So that's an update.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
On this very issue, you brought in the Nixon-Watergate issue. If you remember, and this question goes directly to the what you just spoke about, Nixon and Watergate, the tape, the estate for the Nixon estate, they sued in court to block the public release of the contents of the tape because on there it showed that he actually ordered one of the break-ins. And the estate sued in courts for years and years. And ultimately, the courts ruled that based on the law that was existent at the time, the President of the United States did not at that time have the right to suppress the information that was on that tape. However, those rights have since been upgraded by presidents, succeeding presidents, updated the privacy law and the statute about presidential discretion and presidential discovery. So now, with the new laws that are in effect, would the grand juries have a right to hear this information? Because that was the only reason why the information on the Nixon tapes became public. And it was like the Nixon estate sued for like 8 or 10 years before we just heard about these tapes a couple of years ago. So on the new law that would affect this, do we have the same rights?
Mm-hmm. The courts can basically pierce you an awful lot, and the grand jury has basically the same power. If you don't comply with a subpoena, that's a contempt of court, and you go to jail. So the grand jury is very powerful. And Chuck Grassley is another, you know, regarding Fast and Furious, the Obama Holder situation. Chuck Grassley has been talking about using a federal grand jury to start getting the subpoenas they need because Eric Holder isn't complying with the congressional mm-hmm. subpoena, not enforced by the Senate. So what do you do? The grand jury can pierce through all this, and it's a pretty serious scenario. And so the goal here, of course, you know, many of us listening here knew our power. We were on the grand jury. We'd say, subpoena for the kill list. Number two, subpoena for the men that were at the meeting. Subpoena number three, subordinates, anybody around a scenario, and then start hitting them with indictments. Now, these Obama might want to kill a bunch of people he doesn't like. And then maybe Robert and I have our name on the list. Sammy Sanford sent an email. He says, yeah, I think I'm on the list too. You know, kind of joking around, but kind of not. Where is this heading to?
We're on two lists, Kelly. We're on two lists, Kelly, because neither Obama nor Romney like us very much.
Yeah. So what can happen here? What our goal is these guys that are doing the king's work, if they start getting subpoenas before a grand jury and they're asked exact questions about this, it's going to be like, I better stop what I'm doing.
I think it's the most important thing is the public became educated on this then.
I have a question. What happened to Andrew Breitbart?
I believe the media. The media said he had a heart attack at age 42 just the day before he was going to release the Obama tapes.
I know that. That's why I want to know what happened to him. Because when I had an encounter with, who are those horrible people?
Occupy
Wall Street. I had an encounter with them, and Breitbart picked it up, and I was on the O'Reilly show. And, you know, from what I understood, he was coming out with stuff right before the election.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, at the age of 42, he's out with some of his friends having a couple of beers, and he dies.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It just doesn't seem right to me.
Well, I heard the person who did the autopsy died shortly. Well, the person who did the autopsy died shortly after performing the autopsy.
Speaking of Occupy Wall Street, there was just an article that came out today that said that our dear friend George Soros is now behind funding that movement.
Yes, he is. I just read
that. And don't buy Ben and Jerry's ice cream.
Oh, well, you know what? Speaking of George Soros, I only have 4 minutes here, but if this clip's short, I'd like to play it since someone mentioned George Soros. Let's see. Great. It's only a minute and a half, and so just because people brought it up, I want to play this. So if you don't mind, please humor me. This is George Soros.
Well, look, either you'll have an extremist conservative, be it Gingrich or Santorum, in which case I think it would make a big difference which of the two comes in. If it's between Obama and Romney, there isn't all that much difference, except for the crowd that they bring with them. Romney would have to take Gingrich or Santorum as a vice president and probably have some pretty extreme candidates for the Supreme Court. So that's the downside.
But isn't there actually quite a big difference between even a President Obama and a President Romney when it comes to questions of taxation, particularly taxation of the so-called 1%, issues like carried interest? Do you see any difference
there? That is the big difference, and that has led my hedge fund community abandon Obama in favor of any Republican because they don't like to be taxed.
Are you one of Lenin's useful idiots in the view of your fellow hedge fund billionaires to be making this kind of argument?
Well, I suppose so. I'm a traitor to my class.
Even George Soros said there isn't much difference between Romney and Obama. I just had to play that after hearing George Soros, you know, hearing his name. So,
there is a difference between twin brothers. I mean, you know, Obama believes in indefinite detention. Romney believes in indefinite incarceration. They both support the NDAA.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. And unfortunately with that, folks, I only have 2 minutes left on the show, and I really appreciate you coming in and listening to Sharon tonight, and I thank you very much, Sharon, for coming in and sharing us that information about Romney Care and talking about Obamacare. And everyone in the chat, thank you very much for coming in and listening. For those of you who have listened on the archives, I'd like to thank you, too. And everyone have a good night. And, as I said, sorry for ending things so abruptly, but I just looked at my counter, which is telling me, unfortunately, it's time to go. So good night, everyone. Come again.
Good night, Sharon.
Good night.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Appreciate
thanks
it.
Bye. Bye-bye.
With that, folks, we'll end with a little bit of music here.